What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of MIAA Weekly. I'm your host, Jesse Cordova. Email the show at MIAAweekly@gmail.com and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at MIAAweekly. We are winding down, making the final turn into the home stretch of the 2020 or 2019-2020 basketball season. For some teams, the regular season's over. For a handful, there is one game left on Saturday night in the MIAA. And for four teams, that'll be it. But for those lucky 10, they have the MIAA Championship Tournament in Kansas City to look forward to next week. Today on the show, in segment one, we're going to take a look at the bottom of the league standings and see which teams are still fighting for those last couple of spots in that championship tournament in Kansas City. We also look at the middle of the league, as it looks like there might be one seeding question remaining as far as a team that is still fighting for a first-round bye into the quarterfinals. In segment two, I'm joined by the sports director of the St. Joseph News Press and friend of the show, Brandon Zenner, as we talk about Tuesday night's game between Missouri Western and Northwest Missouri State that unfortunately didn't live up to the hype. However, we talk about some of that hype. We talk about how far Sundance Wicks has brought that program in a short amount of time that led to there being hype surrounding that game again for the first time in a long time. And we talk about the MIAA tournament coming up next week, as well as what he thinks some of the surprise storylines of the season have been in the MIAA. After that interview, we will also take a look at the regional standings that were updated this week. As expected, after an 0-2 week last week, Missouri Southern took a little bit of a dive. And Rogers State actually saw their stock rise in the regional rankings after going 2-0 last week. We will talk more about that in segment two. But we start with the Thursday night action in Edmond, Oklahoma. You know, we've talked a little bit about Central Oklahoma this year as being a team that's much improved from last year. Last season, Central Oklahoma finished in last place in the MIAA. They were 4-15 in the league and 11-17 overall. On Thursday night, Central Oklahoma got a big overtime win over Fort Hays State. That win put Central Oklahoma at 7-11 in MIAA play this season. If my math is right, and I think it is, that win put UCO in the MIAA tournament. Again, UCO is at 7-11 right now, and if you look at the updated conference standings, that actually catapulted them all the way up to 8th place in the league. They actually leapfrogged Lincoln by virtue of the fact that the one time that the Broncos and Blue Tigers played this year, Central Oklahoma won that game. As of right now, Lincoln owns the tiebreaker, UCO owns the tiebreaker over Lincoln, Fort Hays State, and Pittsburgh State, who are the next three teams behind them in the league standings. The best any of those teams can finish, aside from Lincoln, is 7-12. So if Lincoln finishes in a tie with Pittsburgh State or Fort Hays State, they will own a tiebreaker, and they only have to finish ahead of one of those teams to definitively be in the top 10. So once again, that's my reasoning. That's my logic. As of right now, if you're a Central Oklahoma fan, take a breath. exhale, head over to the MIAA website and book your tickets because your team is playing in Kansas City next week. On the other hand, Fort Hays State had been playing pretty well. I made the comment, you know, we spent a couple of weeks during the basketball season there where we actually turned our attention back to football. First, we had the news that broke about the non-conference vote failing at the NCAA meetings in San Diego. So we did an episode where we talked about that. And then we did a National Signing Day special where we talked about, obviously, National Signing Day for football in the first couple of weeks of February. While we were not looking, Fort Hays State actually rang off five straight wins to bring themselves back into that conversation. However, after an overtime loss at Central Oklahoma on Thursday night, Fort Hays State has now lost three of their last four, and they head into their season finale in Wichita against Newman, needing a win and some help. Right now, the Tigers are sitting at 6-12 overall, or 6-12 in the league, rather. They're 13-14 overall. With a win over Newman, Fort Hays State will move to 7-12, which will most likely put them in a virtual tie with at least one, maybe two other teams for the last couple of spots in the MIAA tournament. Here's the problem. From the best that I can tell, Fort Hays State doesn't own a tiebreaker against any of those teams. So, what that means is they need the other 6-12 team, which is Pittsburgh State, to lose on Saturday for the Tigers to have a chance to make it to Kansas City. Pittsburgh State plays host to a Central Missouri team who has already been eliminated from the MIAA tournament. If Pittsburgh State and Fort Hays State both win, and even if UCO and Lincoln both lose, and there's a four-way tie at 7-12, according to my math and looking at the schedules, I actually think that Fort Hays State will be the odd team out because all three of those other teams, Lincoln, UCO, and Pitt State, beat Fort Hays State during the regular season. So unless Fort Hays State, A, wins in Wichita on Saturday, that's obviously number one, first and foremost, and two, if they don't get some help from the Mules of Central Missouri in Pittsburgh, then for the first time since they joined the MIAA back in 2006, Fort Hays State will miss the MIAA tournament. You're listening to MIAA Weekly. I am your host, Jesse Cordova. Email the show at MIAAweekly@gmail.com and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at MIAAweekly. The other thing I wanted to talk about as it pertains to the MIAA tournament is up around the 6-7 line. Northeastern State finished their season with a big win over Emporia State on Thursday night as well. They finished the conference season with a record of 11-8. Nebraska Kearney got a very close win over Newman on Thursday night, and they finished the season with a road matchup in Edmond, Oklahoma against Central Oklahoma. If UNK wins that game on Saturday, they will also be sitting at 11-8 in the conference standard, or the conference record of 11-8. This season, Northeastern State and Nebraska Kearney have played twice. Each one of them won the game on the road. I'm going to level with you. And I understand this is probably not the kind of content you come here for, but I just got to be honest. I don't know what the alternate tiebreaker is. I know the first tiebreaker is head-to-head. I don't know what the next tiebreaker will be after that. So if two teams went 1-1 against one another, I want to say that the second tiebreaker is whoever is ranked higher in the regional rankings, but I don't know where it goes after that if neither one of those two teams is ranked in the top 10 in the region. So that's something to keep an eye on Saturday, and as the conference standings get updated and the brackets get released. There is still a chance that Nebraska Kearney might move up from the 7 line to the 6 line, and that's relevant because remember, with 10 teams going to Kansas City, the number 7 team has to play on Tuesday against the number 10 seed, who you could argue might be the team with the absolute most momentum and the most reckless abandon going into that tournament. Whereas the 6 seed, they get to kick their heels up, spend some time in Kansas City, shoot around, practice, take in some games, and largely relax until Friday when they'll take on the number 3 seed, presumably Missouri Southern. Northeastern State, sitting in that 6 line right now, they're one of my sleeper picks to be a very tough out in Kansas City. They're statistically one of the best defensive teams in the country. They've got 2 guards who can fill it up on a given night, and they have very underrated length on the inside. If Caleb Smith and Kendrick Thompson get hot in Kansas City, and they play the kind of defense we know they're capable of playing, we've seen them play Missouri Southern, Rogers State, and Northwest close this year. I think that Missouri Southern, no disrespect to Nebraska Kearney, but I think Missouri Southern would love it if Nebraska Kearney and Northeastern State flipped spots in the conference standings going into the tournament next week. That is going to wrap it up for segment 1. We're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our sponsor. When we come back on the other side, we'll be joined by the sports director of the St. Joseph News Press, Brandon Zinner, as he weighs in on, well, he gives his final thoughts, I guess you could say, on the regular season in the MIAA, and we talk about the incredible turnaround that is officially underway or maybe even ahead of schedule in St. Joseph as Sundance Wicks has taken Missouri Western from the cellar to possibly being the number 4 overall seed in the MIAA tournament next week. After we get with Brandon Zinner, we'll also talk about the regional rankings, and I've got a couple of quick messages in the mailbag to get to. Keep it locked right here. More MIAA Weekly is coming up in just a minute. Back in on the MIAA Weekly podcast, I'm your host, Jesse Cordova, joined now by the sports director of the St. Joseph News Press. He is Brandon Zinner. Brandon, thank you for giving me some time today, man.
Absolutely. Glad to be on.
All right, so obviously, you know, the big story in the MIAA this week was that big showdown between Northwest Missouri State and Missouri Western in St. Joseph on Tuesday night. Unfortunately, the game didn't really live up to the hype as far as the final score is concerned and how competitive it was. You were in the arena, if I'm not mistaken. Can you kind of give me your impressions being there in the building?
Well, that was such an awesome atmosphere, and that's kind of what a lot of these players dream of, playing in these hostile environments. And we know sometimes the D2 atmosphere isn't what you see at some of like the bigger D1 schools, when you think of the likes of Duke and Kentucky and just all these cool places. But that arena, that had a D1 feel to it. An hour before the game, there was not a seat left to be taken. The crowd was on the court. There was a huge student section. And of course, Northwest, just about 40 minutes away from campus, their fans made the trip down. And just the atmosphere and the feel, it had the big game feel that it deserved. The number 1 team in the MIAA, number 1 team in the country, versus a team that was unbeaten at home, 11-0, and then number 3 in the MIAA. And the arena was awesome. As you said, the game didn't really live up to it after the first about 5-7 minutes of the game, due to multiple factors. But man, that was a fun contest, and what a cool arena for those guys to get to play in.
You know, talking about the atmosphere, and we'll get more into the game here in just a second, but I want to get your thought on this. Last night, I sent out a tweet that I noticed on my Twitter feed that there were newspaper beat writers from up around Maryville that were throwing shade at the student section for the chirping that they were doing, which is kind of weird to see. And then right as I was reading that, I have, you know, the game on my TV, and obviously, if those who are not familiar, MIAA.TV, they usually pipe in the radio broadcast for the play-by-play for the broadcast. And I hear the Missouri Western broadcast team kind of poking fun at Maryville or Northwest Missouri State's basketball crowds as not being as substantial because of the fact that it's not football. Can you kind of give people a feeling of what how big a rivalry this is?
So this is it's funny. Sundance said the other day, Sundance Wicks, the Missouri Western head coach, he said, "I'd like to start this to think this is becoming a rivalry. I mean, these schools are so close. Everybody that basically goes to one of these schools is getting recruited in some capacity, probably by both, more so probably on the football side than the basketball side, just because of obviously where the competition levels have been as of late. But especially with just how Missouri Western has come back up, and we've seen it in football the last couple of years, and then now in basketball, and just the proximity, these fans are just getting into it, and it's really fun to see. Yeah, there was probably a couple of times where it was taken too far. I wouldn't go as far like calling out college students on social media, maybe as some other people have gone. That's just my opinion. I mean, they're college students. Athletic directors and coaches will take care of that. But yeah, I mean, that was really cool. And the rivalry, it's getting closer to coming back on men's basketball. And then, of course, on football, it's going to be fun to see what they're able to do this year. But that's a conversation for 8 months from now.
You alluded to the comments that Coach Wicks made leading up to the game, saying that this is becoming a rivalry now as Missouri Western is starting to close that gap. Bigger picture, you know, you've been covering Missouri Western for a while now. How remarkable a turnaround is this? I mean, it's really easy to look at the standings and say, yeah, Missouri Western was a cellar dweller, and they're going to have a first-round bye going into, or at least a bye into the Thursday or Friday games in Kansas City coming up next week. How impressive a turnaround is that, considering where Missouri Western was and the caliber of play that we've seen from them this year and in Sundance Wicks' second season?
It's remarkable. It doesn't even begin to say it. We asked Sundance Wicks about this the other day, thinking that maybe this team is a year ahead of where people thought he might be. And he basically said, "That's for you guys to judge. I go in every single day believing that we can be the best team in this conference every single day." And I think that kind of just embraces the mindset of the guys he's brought in and kind of the culture that he's trying to establish here at Missouri Western. I mean, you think about just a couple of years ago, this team won six games in a season. They just won 11 in a row at home. And they're all, in all intents and purposes, going to be either the 4 or the 5 seed now in the tournament after not being there the last two seasons. And I don't think they've won a tournament game in 6 years. So remarkable doesn't even begin to say it. And they battled through injuries, and they were 3-7 at one point in this year. And they have possibly their most talented player on the team he's redshirting. Caleb Bennett transferring in from Lehigh. He might be the best basketball player on this team, and others taking a year to get him right ACL wise. And remarkable doesn't even begin to cover it. And I think it's only gonna continue to get stronger over the next couple of years.
All right, so moving into the game on the court, as I'm joined now by Brandon Zinner. He is the sports director of the St. Joseph News Press. And in the first half, you know, both teams, you could tell the atmosphere was kind of getting to them in different ways. I think that with Missouri Western, with so many young guys, it looked like the moment kind of got to them. And with Northwest Missouri State, who is number one in the country, number one in the conference, and as good a program as you're going to find at any level in college basketball, even they seemed like they were playing a little more amped up than we're used to seeing them in the early going. Was that your impression, you know, in the first 5 to 7 minutes after the tip-off?
Well, it's funny, the first 5 minutes, Missouri Western, they jump out, and they were leading 8-5 at the first media timeout, and they looked poised. It was Northwest who was coming down, and they had a couple turnovers, and then there was a some attempts they had down low that just that weren't falling, and they had a couple block shots and a couple air balls just down low that they weren't falling. And Western looked like they were in a groove. Honestly, Western should have been winning by more at that point. I think there was back-to-back, maybe even three straight possessions where they had a miss and got an O-board and had a chance of getting a putback, and they just weren't able to capitalize on it and build a lead while Northwest is cold, because we all know that Northwest has the ability to get hot at any time. I think they shot almost 60% from three for the game, or maybe even higher than that. But Northwest just... it's a game of 40 minutes. That's what Sundance Wick said after the game. And unfortunately, Western played 5 good minutes, and Northwest Missouri State played 35 really elite minutes of basketball. And the moment they said after the game that maybe they were thinking about the moment in the lead up to the game, maybe more so than thinking about the game itself. And walking down the scout, and Sundance Wicks thinks that that played a big part in their role, and so did the senior leaders. That's what they said after the game.
You know, we talk about the gap in talent and the gap in experience and everything like that between Western and Northwest. You know, the most remarkable part of what Sundance Wicks has done at Missouri Western is the level of talent that he's brought in. That being said, coming into this game, they're without one of their top players in Will Eames, who's just a redshirt freshman. And then Tyrell Carroll gets into really early foul trouble. How much do you think that played a role? Now, not to say that, you know, in a 20-something point game, that makes all the difference. But how much of a factor was it that those guys were not on the floor in the first half?
Yeah, and I said it leading up to the game. I knew Will would not be playing. He had a sprained ankle against Missouri Southern, and Will Eames is kind of a guy that was brought in for this matchup with Northwest Missouri State, because we know how big Ryan Welty and Ryan Hawkins are. They have elite size with the elite talent and just the things they're able to do out of the 3-point arc. And Will Eames has the exact same size. He's basically a mold of Ryan Hawkins, and you have him in that game, so you can guard him at the 3-point arc and then be able to stop him on the drive whenever you have to take him out of the lineup and replace him with a guy with Reese Glover. So they had three guys under 6 foot out on the arc, and Tyrell Carroll, Tyus Milhon, and Reese Glover, and that spells mismatches on defense, especially when Northwest is able to do what they want and get switches, and that's what we saw. That's kind of how Northwest took over the game. Will Eames could have been in there and provided more help defensively, and probably provided more of a matchup problem on both ends. Really, Reese Glover played a good game offensively, but we saw Ryan Hawkins was able to get down low and get some buckets off the glass and end up with 17 points in the first half. And Hawkins' fast start, he carried them in that first half. And we saw, and then Tyrell Carroll, yeah, obviously he had 3 fouls in the first half. A couple of them were pretty questionable, but I mean, they were, for the most part, the referees were pretty consistently calling everything throughout the most of the game. So you just got to learn to adapt, and that's something this Western team, they're so young, they've got to learn that, learn what's being called, and that will come with time. But yeah, definitely, both of them played a factor. I don't know if it would have been enough to overcome a 25-point game. That was one of Northwest's best games they probably played this year, one of Western's worst games they played this year, and unfortunately they just came on the wrong night.
So switching sides over here now, we're going to go to the number one team in the nation, Northwest Missouri State. All season long, everyone's been saying, how do we beat this team? What's the secret? What's the key? What's the formula that we can get it done? But just speaking plainly, is there a formula for beating a team that shoots over 60% from three and just about 60% from the floor every single night?
Yeah, you got to really hope that Trevor Hudgens and Ryan Hawkins probably get 3 or 4 fouls, probably 4 fouls in the first half, because they're not coming off the floor with 2 or 3 fouls. Ben McCollum has too much trust in his players, and that's probably not ever going to happen. And even when you do, you have a guy like Ryan Welty, who, if he gets any lick of space, is going to knock down threes. And then Diego Bernard, we know how elite his athleticism is, and he shut down Tyrell Carroll for the most part last night. Diego's probably one of the best defenders in the country. Obviously, I haven't got to see everybody, but he's the best defensive player, in my opinion, in the MIAA. And then Luke Waters, only a freshman, but he came in. He was 3 of 3 from three-point range in the first half, and that provided a big jolt to the Bearcats. And I don't know how you beat this team. You got to yeah, you just got to try to catch them on an off night. Maybe that's what Central Missouri did earlier this year, but we've seen over the last 4 years how many off nights has this Northwest team have. They just have too much weapons, too much shooting, and then when you have a guy like Trevor Hudgens, when shots aren't falling, his ability just to dice through the lane and get a bucket at will, whether it's with a floater or a reverse layup, they've got too much, and it's going to take an elite level team playing their absolute best game just to give Northwest a run at possibly beating them down the stretch.
Just for everyone's reference, how long have you been covering MIAA sports in general in the North Kansas City metro area?
I've been covering the MIAA since I went to Northwest Missouri State in 2011. For people who don't know, I graduated from Northwest in 2015, so I covered that basketball team while I was up there for three seasons. And then after Northwest, I went out to Fort Hays. So I covered in Hays, Kansas. I covered Fort Hays for a whole year, and of course, I came back and I watched Northwest and Western games up here, and then I moved back to St. Joe, covered Northwest, and then kind of got moved into the Missouri Western beat here. So I've been covering MIAA almost for 10 years now, which is pretty crazy to think about. Jeez.
So with that being said, and with that kind of that background for context or for a point of reference for everybody listening, how do you think Trevor Hudgens stacks up when compared to guys like Justin Pitts and DeShawn Cooper?
Which is crazy because I remember whenever DeShawn Cooper was graduating and we saw Justin Pitts play and we talked about, like, there's no way Justin Pitts can be better than DeShawn Cooper. And then by the end of his freshman year, it was pretty clear Justin Pitts is probably better than DeShawn Cooper. And then we thought the same with Trevor Hudgens, but then in his very first game of his career, I think he had 30 points down here at the Hall of Fame Classic in St. Joe at Civic Arena. And then now you just watch the things he's able to do. Everything that Trevor Hudgens provides to the team, it's hard to say now if he'll be better than Justin Pitts. But, I mean, here he is in his second year. He's lost one game. He's probably going to win another national title this year with a team that has remarkably less depth than Justin Pitts ever played with. He was playing with 9, 10 guys at times. And this Northwest team, they don't play more than 6 in a game most nights, which is just remarkable to think about. And, Trevor Hudgens, he might go down. He has a possibility to go down as, if not the best basketball player in Northwest history, possibly even higher than that. It was funny because the Western students were chirping last night at the Bearcats, and one of the things they were saying is, Trevor, why are you here? You're D1, bro. So, I mean, that's a... For some smack talk, I guess that's a pretty good compliment. He's Trevor Hudgens is remarkable, and if I had a vote, he would definitely be the National Player of the Year, which is crazy to think about because he's not even the leading scorer on his own team. But Trevor Hudgens, yeah, he's something special, and anyone who gets a chance to watch him should truly embrace that moment.
We're a week away now from the MIAA tournament in Kansas City as we record this on a Wednesday afternoon. Overall, just... you know, broad spectrum across the MIAA this year, not just as it pertains to Northwest and Missouri Western, but in the league in this basketball season, what do you think has been kind of a story that's developed that you didn't really see coming?
Maybe the Pitt State, I did not expect the struggles that Pitt State is having this year. And then you also have teams like Rogers, who's new to the league, and here they are. They're probably going to finish second in the conference. How cool is that? And what a welcome to the conference they've been. And, I mean, they've been lights out. They have some really, really good basketball players down there, a really senior-laden team. And then Northeastern State, they were a team that I think they were last in the conference maybe 2 years ago. And then they've been right in the mix, right in the middle of things, and beating some good teams most of the year. Just this league... It's deep. Washburn, a couple of years ago, this team might be the second best team in the MIAA, and here they are fighting in the number 5-4 seed. It's just maybe outside of Northwest how competitive everybody else has been with each other. It's been really fun to see, and this has been one of the really one of the funner seasons of basketball that I can remember. Yeah, but probably Roger State coming in and just being able to take the control of a really good conference and take the number 2 seed. That's something that's really impressive to me. I've been really impressed watching that program.
going into Kansas City next week, who do you think is a lower seeded team in the men's division that could make some noise in municipal?
If I'd say probably the lowest this thing will go is probably whoever's in that 4 or 5 seed. I still like, obviously, Missouri Southern with Cam Martin. There's no reason they can't go win, beat anybody, just because when you have a guy who has that talent. I mean, he put up 54 last week against Missouri Southern. Western, we watched that. Northwest is going to do their thing. Roger State's going to give everybody a run. I'd say whoever's in that 4 or 5 matchup has the best chance of making a run, and that's probably the Washburn or Missouri Western, just because they both have the ability to lock down on defense. They both have the ability to score points whenever they need. I think outside of the top five, it's going to be really hard for one of these teams to move through, just because I think this group has kind of separated themselves. But in Kansas City, you never know. Weird things can happen. There's no reason someone else can't get hot. We've seen Pitt State give teams runs. And but outside the top five, I think it's going to be really hard for one of these teams to try to stake a claim down at Municipal.
Where can people find your content? Where can they follow you online, Brandon?
Yeah, the best place to go is if you go to Twitter, type in Brandon Zenner. I should be the only one on there. You can find me at NP Now Zenner. If you want to follow me on Instagram, I guess you can too. I'm always posting from the arena as well. Just find my name. Posting stuff on my professional Facebook. You can find that Brandon Zenner, NP Now. And then you can read everything that I do and watch all our videos at newspressnow.com.
He is the sports director of the St. Joseph News Press, and I think that after having him on now 2 times officially, and we tried a third before while we had some internet issues, we can officially call him a friend of the show. He is Brandon Zenner. Thanks for your time, man.
Thanks, anytime.
You're listening to the MIAA Weekly Podcast. I am your host, Jesse Cordova. Email the show at miaaweekly@gmail.com, and make sure you follow the show on Twitter, at MIAA Weekly. Shout out and thanks to Brandon Zenner for giving me some time this week to give me some perspective on the Northwest Missouri State versus Missouri Western rivalry, and just for chatting with me for about 20 minutes on the MIAA in general. So as promised, let's take a look now at the regional standings this week after they were updated on Wednesday. Again, Missouri Southern going 0-2 last week with losses on the road against number one ranked Northwest Missouri State in what was an absolute heartbreaker, a buzzer-beating jumper by Trevor Hudgens being the difference in that game in Maryville, and then the big upset loss in St. Joseph to the upstart Missouri Western Griffins. Missouri Southern fell all the way down from number 3 to number 6. Now, I alluded to this and I talked about it briefly in the last episode. Right now, the name of the game for Missouri Southern is that they want to be on the opposite side of the bracket from Northwest Missouri State. So if Missouri Southern was going to drop down from the 3 line, it was better for them to drop down, in theory, it was better for them to drop all the way down to 6 or 7. Now, they are a little more at risk now of potentially having their bid stolen if a team like a Northeastern State or a Missouri Western out of the MIAA, or maybe a team like, again, Sioux Falls or Upper Iowa out of the NSIC makes a run in their tournament, or whatever the case may be, somebody out of the GAC. Being the third team out of a conference in an 8-team regional, you're going to be the one that could be at risk for losing your bid to a bid stealer on Championship Sunday. On the other hand, Rogers State, they saw their stock rise. They were the 7th seed last week in the regional rankings. They actually, after going 2-0 last week, rose all the way up to the 5 seed. And if the regional started today, they would be taking on a 22-6 Northern State team out of Aberdeen, South Dakota. So Rogers State gets a little bump in the regional rankings this week after going 2-0 with wins over Fort Hays State and Nebraska Kearney on the road. Roger State closes out the regular season with a road game at Emporia State on Saturday afternoon. Northwest Missouri State, no surprise, still sitting at number one in the region and number one in the nation. Rounding out the rest of the regional, you've got number two, Southeastern Oklahoma State. Number two is Southern Nazarene. Number three is Southeastern Oklahoma State, so that would be Missouri Southern's matchup if the regional started right now. Again, four, Northern State, five, Rogers State. Missouri Southern at number six, Minnesota Duluth out of the NSIC at seven, and Oklahoma Baptist holding down the eight spot for the second week in a row. Also for the second week in a row, number nine and 10 are Henderson State and Sioux Falls. So again, we'll revisit that next week. It'll be obviously next week. We could be probably looking at the final rankings depending on when we record the show. But as of right now, Missouri Southern is where they would like to be at the moment, which is on the other side of the bracket from Northwest Missouri State. At this point in time, Missouri Southern just needs to probably take care of their business, win a couple of games in Kansas City, if at all possible, and see if they can get bumped up a little bit and keep themselves safe from a potential bid-stealing situation come time for the regional at the end of next week. Let's dig into the mailbag this week. We had one message in the mailbag to get to this time around. Just a reminder, you can always email the show at miwaweekly@gmail.com, or you can find me on Twitter at miwaweekly, where the DMs are open, so you can always send me a message directly via social media as well. And if you're on the message boards at d2football.com, I also frequent those message boards or that forum, so I'm also reachable that way as well. So anytime you want to have a question that you want to have talked about in the show, or an opinion or a take that you want to try to get off, by all means, I'd love for this to be as interactive as possible. But this week, the question comes from Sam. And Sam wants to know, all the talk is that Ben McCollum is a shoe-in and a lock for Coach of the Year because his team is ranked number one in the league and in the country. Could a case be made for somebody else besides McCollum for Coach of the Year, i.e. Sundance Wicks at Missouri Western or Justin Barkley at Rogers State? Love the show. Thanks. Sam, as always, thank you for listening, and thank you for taking the time to write in. I actually sent out a message via Twitter about this very topic not that long ago. I think that Justin Barkley absolutely deserves consideration for Coach of the Year. Rogers State was a team that, if memory serves, they were picked to finish 11th in the MIAA in their first year in the league, and they are going to have the two seed. They won't play until that's not true. They'll play on Thursday, but then after that, assuming they win on Thursday, they won't play again until Saturday. That's a really big deal in the MIAA tournament. Having that bye week, or that, not that bye week, but that day of rest between the quarterfinal and the semifinal is an enormous advantage for the number one and number two seed. And for Justin Barkley to maneuver this league in his first year with that team the way that he has, to not only being ranked number two in the MIAA, but currently sitting at number five in the region, I absolutely think that Justin Barkley deserves consideration for that. And I think Sundance Wicks is also a guy that you mentioned that I think also deserves a lot of credit. Coaching is not just what happens on game day. Coaching is recruiting. Coaching is building and managing a culture in your locker room and in your program. Sundance Wicks has done those two things maybe better than anybody else in the league this year. Missouri Western's a team that right now is sitting at 12 conference wins. They're 12-6 right now with one game left to play. They could end up with 13 wins in the MIAA this season. Last year, they had six. The year before that, they had four. The year before that, they had three. If Missouri Western wins on Saturday, if they beat Washburn at home, where they are 11-1 this year, then Missouri Western will have won more games, or as many games, in the MIAA this season as they did in the last three seasons combined. That absolutely deserves consideration for Coach of the Year. So, yeah, I think that both Sundance Wicks and Justin Barkley absolutely deserve consideration, and I think that at least one of those guys, we could see them make a real push at being co-coach of the year. I do think that McCollum is probably going to at least share the award because of the fact that, again, Northwest is a one-loss team who's ranked number one in the country, and that's just something that gets rewarded. And I don't want to make it sound like that's wrong, because it's absolutely not. What Ben McCollum has done at Northwest is ridiculous. And I'm sure that there are probably 13 schools or 13 fan bases in the MIAA that would be willing to donate money to Evansville or Missouri State or somebody in the Division I level to hire Ben McCollum away. And I'm sure that there's a decent chunk of one fan base that would be willing to throw some of their own money down to keep him in Maryville. He's done a terrific job, and that's the understatement of the century. It's probably the biggest understatement I've ever made on this show. But Ben McCollum, I don't really know how you can argue with the results. As of right now, just like I keep saying that Northwest is the champion until they're not the champion anymore, Ben McCollum is the best coach in this league. He's probably the best coach in all of Division II basketball. So while I understand the boredom factor from some people, if Ben McCollum wins the Coach of the Year award outright this year, I won't have a problem with it. And I would go a step further and say that if Justin Barkley or Sundance Wicks don't win Coach of the Year this year, I don't think that that takes one shred of anything away from what those two guys have accomplished with their programs this season. That is about going to wrap it up for this week's episode of MIAA Weekly. Remember, on Saturday, there are a handful of games being played in the league that have big-time tournament implications, mostly at the bottom of the league standings. In particular, Nebraska Kearney traveling to Edmond to take on Central Oklahoma. UCO playing for seeding in that game, as well as Nebraska Kearney. As if the Lopers win that game, I believe that they will move on to the number six line ahead of Northeastern State, forcing Northeastern State to play in that game on Wednesday against the 10 seed. Other games to keep an eye on: Pittsburgh State playing host to Central Missouri, Fort Hays State at Newman, and Lincoln at Missouri Southern. Missouri Southern, actually, I think I overlooked this, but they do not have the number three seed in Kansas City completely locked up. If they don't win in Joplin against Lincoln on Saturday, and Missouri Western beats Washburn at home on Saturday, then there is a chance that Missouri Western will actually move ahead of Missouri Southern onto the three line going into Kansas City next week. So a lot of moving parts still to be decided on the last day of the conference season in the MIAA. I know that I'll be watching, and I'll be all over social media giving you my thoughts. And, of course, I'll be in Kansas City for the tournament next week. I'll be going up on Friday night and staying through the weekend to catch the semifinal and the championship game on Sunday. But until next time, I'm Jesse Cordova. This has been the MIAA Weekly Podcast. thank you for listening. Daps, high fives, and handshakes.